This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to share with you a detective story of sorts. Today's guest succumbed to a mysterious ailment, and this has been the subject of a new book. It's just out, and it's already lighting up the charts on Amazon. The book is entitled Poisoned. The author is Alan Bell. He's an attorney, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his experience here. So, Alan, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Congratulations on the success of the book. You tell me that it's now positioned well on Amazon, correct?
Yeah, in three different categories, including the environmental category, and new releases. It's number one at this point.
Excellent.
So we're real pleased about that, and I'm happy to be on your show, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for inviting me.
It's my pleasure. Okay, so set the stage for us. You know, what was your life like before you experienced a bizarre set of health challenges?
Well, take yourself back to the 1980s. I was in my mid-30s. I was living and working in South Florida. I was an organized crime prosecutor, prosecuting Colombian cartel drug rings and the mob.
Sounds like Miami Vice.
Well, I was going to tell you that at the time, Don Johnson was filming Miami Vice on Miami Beach. On the other side of the bridge, I was in the courthouse living the real Miami Vice. Hmm. In fact, interestingly enough, on a few of those episodes, I was a consultant to give them advice on how to make their shows realistic. So here I was in the courtroom prosecuting these Colombian cartel drug rings in the mob, and hanging out of helicopters, wearing 357 shoulder holsters, and going after bad guys. My law office moved into a brand new building, right on the, you know, overlooking the Atlantic Ocean in South Florida. It was a technological marvel. It was very, you know, it was the highest, most contemporary, newest invention in South Florida. It had talking elevators, plush carpeting, it had a gymnasium and racquetball courts and a hotel and shopping and everything you could imagine, self-contained unit. And here I was at the top floor, sitting in my office on my desk, looking out over the Atlantic Ocean, thinking to myself, you know what? I finally made it. After all that hard work, going to law school, playing by the rules, here I am, and now it's time to enjoy the fruits of all my efforts and labors. Well, shortly after moving into that building, I developed a set of very bizarre symptoms. It started off as sore throats, itchy burning eyes, lungs started to hurt, joints started to feel achy, I felt feverish, fatigued, and I started going from doctor to doctor. Nobody really knew what was wrong with me. And as this was happening, the symptoms were getting worse and worse. So I began seeing, you know, more, you know, reputable doctors from some of the finest medical institutions in America. I went to Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. I went to the Cleveland Clinic. I went to the National Jewish Allergy and Immunology Hospital in Denver, Colorado. And various universities, including University of Miami and University of Colorado. And I got to a point where I was in Denver at the National Jewish Hospital, and there was a doctor by the name of Dr. Kirkpatrick, and he had just come from NIH. He was one of the senior most prized doctors at the National Jewish at the time. And he sat me down and he said, "I have something very disturbing to talk to you about." I said, "What's that?" He said, "The last round of blood tests we've run indicates that you were somehow poisoned."
Hmm.
I said, "What? What do you mean poisoned?" He says, "Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. Do you know of anybody that would have wanted to poison you?"
So you had, you hadn't run afoul of Putin, but you may have incurred the wrath of the Colombian drug lord. So yeah, you might have been a target.
Well, you know, that's what I did. I mean, I prosecuted these people, and they were bad people. I mean, they were bringing in, you know, hundreds of kilos of cocaine in to South Florida. It was the cocaine capital of the world. It was the cocaine cowboys. And there was more deaths per capita in South Florida than any other place in the world. So I was at ground zero. So yes, there could have been dozens of people that would have wanted to poison me. And that's what I told Dr. Kirkpatrick. He said, "Well, I'm going to send you back to South Florida and you take a break and go back there and rest for a little while before we do another round of tests." So, in the meantime, I go back to South Florida, and I find an environmental doctor, and he specializes in environmental medicine. You probably know who he is.
Yeah, that's Dr. Robbins.
Dr. Robbins.
Yeah, who is a real pioneer in this field. One of the real stalwarts of the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, and you know has an environmental testing unit, and you know all that stuff. Yeah,
that's right. So I went to him. And I came with, you know, suitcases worth of tests and blood tests and x-rays and scans and this and that. And he said, "I don't need all those tests. Sit down. I want to talk to you." I said, "What do you mean you don't need these tests? How are you going to find out what's wrong with me?" He says, "I want to talk to you. Has any of these other doctors spoken to you about what's going on in your life?" I said, "Actually, not really." So he asked me my history and when the symptoms started. And I said, "Well, it happened after I moved into the building."
Mm-hmm.
He started asking me questions about the building. He said, "I think I know what's wrong with you." I said, "What's that?" He said, "I think you're suffering from sick building syndrome, and I think your building poisoned you, not a person." And I looked at him and I thought, the guy was nuts. I said, "What? My building poisoned me?" I quickly picked up my files and said, "I'm out of here. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. I'm gone." I immediately went to my investigators and I had them comb every aspect of my life to try and find out who poisoned me. Okay? And they went to movie theaters that I frequented, restaurants that I went to, gymnasiums that I worked out in, friends that I associated with, and lastly, they came down to the building that I was working in. And they went through the building, and they discovered that there were dozens and dozens of other people in that building that were getting sick at the same time.
Inexplicably. Nobody knew what was going on. Yeah.
Nobody knew what was going on. Nobody was talking to each other. Nobody was able to connect the dots. They just thought, there's a flu going around or whatever. So they came back and told me this, the investigators, and it really set an alarm off in me because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking about what Dr. Robbins had told me, and believe me, the last thing in the world I would want to know and accept is that the building poisoned me, and that now I have become hypersensitive, because he had told me, Dr. Robbins told me, that what the building caused was me to become hypersensitive to everything in the environment, and that I was going to have to basically live in a bubble for the rest of my life.
Mm.
And I thought the guy, I thought he was nuts. So there's no way I wanted to believe what this guy was saying. That's why I went back to the investigator to try to find out who poisoned me. But when they came back with that information, I had to sit back and say, this guy was right.
Mm.
And if he was right about the building, could he be right about the fact that I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life? So I went back to Dr. Robbins, and he sat me down, and he said, you've gotten to the point where you're now getting grand mal seizures, and you're in really bad shape, and the only thing that we can do is stop this from spiraling further. You need to live in a bubble. You need to get out of South Florida, away from the pesticides and the mold and humidity and the congestion. You need to find a place in the middle of the Arizona desert. And he had me join this group called HEAL, Human Ecology Action League. Yep. I'm sure you know what that is.
Very cool. I used to lecture for them here in New York, frequently. And, they're a group of environmental illness sufferers who are highly sensitive people. I remember, the whole thing of, one time one of my colleagues went to lecture them, and they threw her out because she was wearing, she'd made them an incredible faux pas of wearing perfume to deliver a lecture in front of environmentally sensitive patients. And
right.
Even though she was people were 20 feet from the podium, it was knocking out the whole room. These people were so sensitive. Yeah.
Exactly. So through HEAL, I found this 800 square foot, I call it a bubble, made out of glass, brick, and steel, nothing else. And in the middle of the Arizona desert, 50 miles away from everything, you didn't see any roads, no cars, no schools, no stores, no houses, no people, nothing. And inside this bubble, it was desolate. There was no carpeting, no drapes, no upholstery, nothing. Like a jail cell. And I ended up there with my wife and my little girl. By this time, I'm in a wheelchair, virtually tethered to an oxygen tank. And shortly thereafter, my wife left. She couldn't handle this.
Yeah.
She wasn't wired that way and took off.
Alan, at this time, did people, you were a successful attorney, a real, rational guy in the fast lane. Did people challenge your sanity when you did something like this? I mean, it's an eccentric act to renounce everything and literally retreat into a bubble in the desert. Not a popular choice.
Nobody knew what was happening to me. I mean, there were all kind of rumors floating around. Some people thought I had AIDS. Nobody knew what was wrong with me because I had dropped 40 pounds. I looked very, very sick.
Yeah.
There are pictures of you
in the book. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's not pictures in the book, but there's pictures on the website.
On the website, yeah.
And I have, I was 195 pounds, 6'2", and I was an athlete, and I dropped down 145 pounds. I mean, I looked like I was dying, and I was. But did anybody question me? I got to tell you a quick story. When I was at Mayo Clinic, The intake, the quarterback, the internist who first, examines you and then decides what specialist he's going to send you to. He said, look, the first person I want to send you to is a psychologist.
Of course.
And I want them to do a psychological profile on you.
Yeah.
And I looked at him, I go, hey, what do you mean a psychologist? He says, look, I know you're not crazy. He says, but I have to rule it out, and I expect that it's going to be ruled out. He said to me, now this is back in the 80s, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He said to me, if you were a hysterical housewife, I would think that, yeah, it was in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, but look, you're this white male prosecutor.
Okay.
I know that you're a rational guy. I know this is something physiological. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what. I'll make you a deal. I'll take this psychological test. And when it shows that there's no psychological component to this, I want you to promise me here and now that you're going to get to the bottom of what's wrong with me. He says, we got a deal. So I took the test, and it came back. He said, well, not only is there's nothing wrong with you psychologically, he says, but you are very healthy psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, now it's your turn to do your end of the bargain. And he sent me to every expert under the sun. Yep. And at the end of the day, you know what they diagnosed me with? Chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome.
Which is a wastebasket term, and it's like, go home and live with it, learn to live with it.
So exactly what he said. And I said, well, there's a Dr. Robbins in Boca Raton. Incidentally, you know he passed away, right?
No, I actually didn't know that. He was getting on in years.
Yeah, he passed away. He died of cancer. So I said, have you ever heard of Dr. Robbins? Because he says I have this thing called multiple chemical sensitivity. The guy rolled his eyes and said, Oh yeah, I heard of that.
Yeah.
He says, it's controversial. We're not really sure what it is. We can't say whether it exists or doesn't exist. But hey, if it helps you, you could see him too. Don't hurt.
Go for it. Right.
So.
Basically, please get out of my hospital. We can't help you, and do the best
you can.
Yeah. So, ultimately, so you're situated there in the Arizona desert. Your wife has left you. You're left with, single dad, debilitated, taking care of a small child. What ensued next?
Well, I'm looking at this little redheaded girl with this big blue eyes looking at me, and I say to myself, I've got to try to find a way to fight back, because if I don't, this innocent little girl is going to become an orphan, and I'm going to fight to the end to prevent that from happening. So what I did was I looked around this little bubble, and I saw my only contact to the outside world was a telephone. So with that telephone, I used that to communicate with to the outside world, and I ended up getting to the top scientists on the planet, from Harvard and Yale and Johns Hopkins and Centers for Disease Control and Environmental Protection Agency and the National Institutes of Environmental Health Sciences. And they basically led me to an aha moment that my plight was just a tip of the iceberg of millions of Americans getting ill and dying every year from environmental exposures in all kinds of forms, whether it manifests in cancers or autoimmune syndromes or scleroderma or lupus or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. They're all interrelated to common environmental factors. Mm-hmm. And I had this aha moment. So what I then did was I started calling up charities that focus on these different illnesses to donate money to them for research. And, Ron, what I found was with all the environmental organizations out there focusing on saving the whales and the birds and the trees, nobody was focusing on the humans.
Yeah.
So then I looked at these separate health organizations like American Heart, American Lung, American Cancer, that focus on separate and distinct diseases, yet they all recognize that there is a common environmental component among all of them. Mm-hmm. But yet none of them were focusing on the environmental links in terms of their research. So I saw a big void. So I decided to start a little fledgling charity from inside this bubble called the Environmental Health Foundation. And with my phone and a fax and pencil and paper, I put together a scientific advisory board of top research scientists from the most prestigious prestigious medical university medical centers and governmental agencies like NIH and CDC and ATSDR and all those other agencies on my scientific advisory board. I then got Al Gore, who was vice president at the time, to support my efforts, and Alan Thicke, Jason Priestley, Matthew Perry, Kenny Loggins from Loggins and Messina, and
celebrity
Gene Cernan,
advocates.
Celebrity advocates and Gene Cernan, who is the commander of Apollo 17, the last man to walk on the moon. And I put together this summit. Have you ever heard of the Biosphere 2?
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
That's experiment, which kind of went awry. I think there was even a novel written about that where people were contained in a self-contained environment. And it didn't work out too well. There was all kinds of social conflict. People were starving. This is the Biosphere 1, the initial experiment. But what happened?
Well, actually, the Biosphere 1 is planet Earth. That's us.
Okay.
We're Biosphere 1.
Got it.
We're Biosphere. And Biosphere 2 was actually created by Columbia Medical School and the federal government. And the initial intent was to place man in a self-contained atmosphere so we could study how we could live in a self-contained atmosphere and recirculate and all of our food and water and waste. And the intent was to use that technology for NASA in exploration of other planets like Mars and beyond. Mm-hmm. That's what the intent was behind that project. So in any event, this Biosphere 2 was 60 miles from this bubble. And I thought that's where I wanted to have this big environmental summit called the Environmental Health Summit. And the idea was, do you remember the Manhattan Project in World War II?
Sure, yeah.
Well, for your listeners that may be too young to know what it was, you know, in World War II, the federal government...
Not that I was around then, but, you know, from study of history, fortunately, I know about it.
Exactly. I wasn't around then either. I was born in 54 after the war was over. Indeed. But for those of you all that know what it was, is the federal government wanted to put an end to World War II. And they rounded the top scientists in America, and they put them together at Los Alamos in the middle of the desert, and they asked them to develop a nuclear bomb to end the war. So why not use that same mindset and rounding up the top scientists and putting them together under one roof and asking them, how can we best fight environmentally linked disease? Through treatments, through cures, and through prevention. So I took these top scientists, I put them together under one roof at the Biosphere 2, and we asked them to answer two basic questions. Number one, what are the biggest environmental risks facing Americans today? And number two, where can we get the best bang for the buck to help prevent, treat, and cure environmentally linked disease? And the National Institutes of Environmental Health Sciences put out a white paper as a result of that project. And the director of the National Institutes of Environmental Health Sciences, who was appointed by Bush 1, was there to basically lead that summit that I created and arranged. Now, I was too ill to be able to attend that because I couldn't leave that bubble.
So you orchestrated it.
But my young girl, sorry?
You orchestrated it.
I orchestrated it, created it, and put it together. And I sent my little girl there as my representative to represent me among all these scientists. They actually had an introduction. I kicked off the event through a videotaped speech that they played before all the scientists. But imagine this little redheaded girl, about 9 years old, walking around among these top scientists wearing white lab coats, from the most prestigious scientific institutions in the land, and walking up to one of them and tugging on his white coat and saying, "Excuse me, sir, I understand that you're here to help all these millions of people, but why can't you help my daddy?" And I had no idea that she was doing this. And one of these scientists that she said this to bent over and wrote on a piece of paper the name and phone number of a doctor who is located in Texas. He's a neuropsychiatrist, and he said, "I think this doctor can help your daddy. Have him call him." So she came back to the bubble with this piece of paper and said, "Here, call this doctor, daddy. He's gonna get you out of the bubble." You know, this innocent little girl having no idea that I've been through 300, 400 doctors already. Not knowing, you know, with her naivety and her, you know, what my situation was really like.
I mean, yeah, if she'd been more sophisticated, she would have been just kind of resigned to the fact that you were going to be ill for the rest of your life. But this is a good point at which to pause, because we divide our podcast into two parts, and I want to leave our audience in suspense. In broadcasting, we call this a tease. We're going to find out about the fate of our guest, Alan Bell, who's written a book called Poisoned. He suffered from sick building syndrome, environmental illness, call it what you will, multiple chemical sensitivity, and had to lead a life of isolation, literally in a bubble in the middle of the Arizona desert. But I have a feeling that he's made significant progress towards resolution of his problems because he's authored a great book and he is involved in activism on behalf of sufferers of conditions like this and on behalf of saving our environment. So when we return, we'll continue our discussion with Alan Bell, the author of the book Poisoned. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.